2 minutes to go in the overtime. Game tied at 20. Butker's going to try to win it with a 58-yard field goal. That would tie his own record and the two field goals made by Nick Lowry of that distance back in the 80s. This one would try to walk it off with an overtime victory. Butker will try this again. A 58-yard attempt. He's had plenty of leg on the first two attempts. Butker's kick is up. He lines it up. The kick is long enough. It is good! Harrison Butker, money, 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 penalty. Try to freeze him. He thaws the Chargers with a 23-20 walk-off 58-yard field goal, tying a Chiefs record, his own record that he tied earlier in the game. At 2 minutes to go in the overtime, the Chiefs go to 2-0 and continue their dominance over the AFC West.
I made the 70-yarder at halftime. I told Coach Tobe that, so he was feeling confident. So I'd say if it was on the, you know, what, the 52-yard line or the 48-yard line, that'd be a 70-yard field goal. I would have felt good making that kick. You know, I don't know if Coach Reed would have let me, but if it was the end-of-the-game situation, a long fourth down, I would have felt confident going into that. And then, you know, I didn't know that Nick Lowry had the record for 58 yards. I'm fortunate to be a part of a great organization. I was able to make 56 yards last year, and now 58. I guess I got to break the record and beat Nick Lowry. Hopefully next week, Monday Night Football.
Game-winning kick by Harrison Butker. And Harrison Butker talking about how confident he was from 58 yards out. Says he'd like to try a 70-yarder. Well, that would be something. That would be something. He has worked on his leg strength, and you could tell based on what he did yesterday in L.A., it's pretty nice to have that type of weapon. And a crazy sequence there at the end, and it's very interesting. He had an extra point blocked earlier in the game, so there's no guarantee that even Butker does everything he's supposed to do. The snap might not be good. The snapper might not get it down. So give a lot of credit. This is where we focus on and you know, when the team wins a game, we focus on the quarterback, how well he played, but we don't talk about the offensive line. Or we don't talk about a receiver, a tight end, or a running back, or a fullback. But when the quarterback and the team loses, we focus on the quarterback, and we forget to talk about what the other guys did in regards to, hey, they didn't block. And in this case, we talk so much about the kicker, and he gets a lot of the attention, and rightfully so when he makes them. Sometimes he misses. It's a bad snap. The laces are turned the wrong way. Timing is off. So let's go back here. The sequence in this game was, in overtime, Butker had already made a 58-yarder during regulation, which tied a franchise record set by Nick Lowry, 58-yard field goal. And he had plenty to spare, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so then he has a 53-yarder, and there's a false start. So now he's got to back it up 5 yards, a 58-yarder. And then he goes ahead and kicks a 58-yarder, makes that as well. But there was a timeout right before the snap. So then he's got to try it a third time, and he made a 53-yarder, a 58-yarder, a 58-yarder. Only one of them counted, and that was a game winner at the end. But he made all three of those kicks in a span of about 2 minutes, every single one of them. And he got better. On the third one, he drilled it right down the middle. I felt pretty good about the third one because I'm like, dude, he's been a little bit to the left. He's going to compensate, and he's going to drill this thing. But here's the thing. We focus on Butker making those three kicks. Every single one of those snaps by James Winchester, perfect. Mm-hmm. Every single one of those holds by Tommy Townsend, a new holder for this football team, the punter, a rookie, lights out perfect. So we talk a lot about Butker doing what he did, but without a good snap, without a good hold, Butker doesn't deliver any of those kicks. And it was pretty amazing, that kick sequence at the end. And Butker talked about having to kick three long field goals in the span of a couple minutes.
I think I just got a little bit more angry every kick. So the first one, I thought they called timeout, and then I realized it was a false start. But going into the second one, they called timeout again. So in my head, that's two timeouts. And then I think I even looked at the Chargers sideline because I was like, come on, man, I'm trying to finish this game and get back to Kansas City. So that third one, I felt like was my best kick. And I mean, to have two practice kicks before that is only going to help you. And I'm just really happy that we were able to stay through from the blocked extra point. You know, we have a great field goal unit, James Winchester and Tommy holding the ball, and we were able to put it through. But that's stuff that we do in practice, and we were able to transfer it over to the game.
Yeah, to make a field goal or an extra point in NFL, and then to make a long field goal, and then to do that three times in a row in about 2 minutes, perhaps you could say they got into a rhythm. It was pretty amazing stuff yesterday by the Chiefs. And remember, if they miss that field goal, there's a bad snap, bad hold, or he misses it, the Chargers basically got to pick up 15 yards, and then they're going to kick a 50, 55-yarder and probably could make it, and game is over. And by the way, if he misses that field goal, it's a tie or a loss. You're not winning that game.
Yeah.
It's I mean, going for that kick, backing up 5 yards, And you had a fourth and one. You could have gone for it. That shows how much trust Andy Reid has in his kicker. And it worked out perfectly for the Chiefs. But had he missed it, the Chargers would have 2 minutes, the ball, all they needed to pick up basically two first downs, and they could have kicked the field goal to win it, or the Chiefs defense might have got a stop. Problem is, game probably would have been ended in a tie because there's only 10 minutes in overtime, which I think 10 minutes is not enough time in overtime myself, because you could go on a 10-minute drive and the other team never sees the ball and kick the game-winning field goal at the end. Like I saw the other day with the Bullet Trojans taking 10:05 off the clock in the whole third quarter, mm-hmm. and then a touchdown in the final play of the third quarter. And they had 12-minute quarters in that situation. Reed on his kicker, Harrison Butker.
Butker, I mean, what can you say? He kicked four field goals, and two of them counted. But that's a tough deal, tough thing to do, and he's a mentally tough kid. And we appreciate him and how he goes about his job.
Yeah, we appreciate him, too, here in Chiefs Kingdom. No doubt about it. So let me get this straight. The Chiefs may have the best kicker in the NFL now, who they picked off the practice squad of the Carolina Panthers.
Yes.
Which I did like the pickup at the time, but I didn't know he was going to be this
sure.
good.
Oh, no. Could have expected
nobody
that.
Could expect that. And you have the best quarterback in the league, although I'll tell you that the Chiefs don't right at the moment, but overall they do, but they don't right now. Best quarterback in the league, and you have maybe the best coach in the league as well. I mean, the Chiefs got the trifecta there, kicker, and then you got maybe the best tight end in football, one of the best, the fastest receiver in football. What else can you say? We got maybe the best safety in football in Tyrann Mathieu, and I know that's debatable, but pretty impressive stuff yesterday, and the Chiefs didn't even play that well. That's the crazy thing about it. And this is a sign of a team that is a Super Bowl champion. This is what the Patriots did during their time. They wouldn't play well, find a way to win at the end. Just keep it close, make a few plays. The other team doesn't do what they need to do to finish the game, like Anthony Lynn. Why you don't go for on fourth and one? I don't care if it's at your own 34. Do you know who's on the other side mm-hmm. of the field? We'll talk more about that. I don't understand coaches don't have any guts anymore. I mean, some coaches do, but the coaches, especially the Chargers, in-division opponent, nobody would criticize them if he'd gone for it and didn't get it.
No.
It's like, dude, you got to understand who you're playing against. We'll hear from Anthony Lynn on that. That's where the Chargers lost the game. You had everything in control. You're running the ball well against the Chiefs. Why didn't you go for it? And if you don't get it, you wouldn't have caught, I don't think, much criticism, because you got to understand who's on the other side of the ball. That's Mahomes, and he started getting into a groove there. Late in the game, and just, you know, when the Chiefs are down double digits, do you even worry about it as a Chiefs fan anymore? I mean, I wasn't worried yesterday. I really wasn't. It was 17-6. I'm like, whatever. And I thought the Chiefs were going to punt, and then Butker hit the 58-yarder. And when he kicked that, I'm like, hey, they're only down 8. One score and a two-point piece of cake. Mm-hmm. And then the Chargers, it was just a matter of whether the Chargers could run the ball and the Chiefs, could they finally slow them down the running attack? They did. Got the ball back. Then the big play to Hill, and we'll talk more about that coming up. And then a play that's not being talked about enough is the catch by Hardman for the two-point conversion. That was a sensational catch. And it was like the fourth read for Mahomes on a three-yard play. Mm-hmm. That was incredible play that doesn't even get a highlight. And the Chargers outplayed the Chiefs, honestly. For three quarters of football, they were the better team. But the Chiefs, just like teams like the Patriots, the Cowboys back in the day, the 49ers back in the day, the teams that are really good find ways to win against teams that are decent or bad or competitive, but can't find a way to win. The Chargers head coach had a chance to really give his team a chance to win the game yesterday, and he decided to punt the ball away to the Super Bowl MVP and perhaps the best offense in football. Yeah, I don't think he'll make that mistake again, although I wouldn't be surprised if he did. It just those are not good coaching moves. I know the book. You can go by the books and percentages and all that. You got to understand who you're playing against. The Baltimore Ravens Monday night will go for it on fourth and one at their own 35. They will. And if they don't, then that's shame on them. They've got a great running game. And they got Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram, and now they got J.K. Dobbins. I don't think the Ravens will ever punt the ball Monday night. They're going to go for it all the time. Last year, they almost did every time. Then they kind of scaled back on a fourth and five at their own 40, gave the ball back, and what happened? Mahomes scored a touchdown the very next drive. Listen, it don't matter where the Chiefs offense starts. And I know they didn't play great yesterday, but in crunch time with Mahomes, I don't care if they start at the 10 or at your 35. If you have a chance to keep the ball on a fourth and one, would you rather have Mahomes playing against you with the ball, or would you rather have your offense on the field against the Chiefs defense? I would take the latter. That's just me. And I wasn't surprised at all that Lynn punted. I thought he would punt. And I was with Romo and Nance. You go for it. You absolutely go for it. It's a no-brainer. Old school football. Some of these coaches got to get out of that old way of thinking. It's a different game now. You know, you go for two more instead of one. You take shots down the field. you got to throw the ball more than you run the ball typically. It's just a different game. And some coaches have adapted, and some coaches have not. Yesterday, Anthony Lynn, I thought, made a huge mistake by not going for it on fourth and one.
Huge mistake. 100%.
As soon as he kicked the ball away, I'm like, she's going to win the game.
That's the way I felt, the way the game was going at that point, too, because, I mean, they made the stop. It's three and out, and their offense had been the one that had been the aggressor there late in the game. And, of course, you know, the Chargers had to go down and make a field goal to take the lead back there late. But, I wouldn't have felt real confident if I was a Chargers fan about that.
Listen, if it wasn't for a couple of holding penalties, one which was questionable, the Chiefs would have won in the end of regulation. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were going right down there. It was the penalties that were costly for them. Okay, more on the Chiefs in a moment. First, we want to recap weekend sports. There was volleyball and all kinds of stuff going on this weekend.
Yeah, Smith Center went 3-0 at the Republic County Volleyball Tournament this weekend. It was just a pool play tournament, so not necessarily a championship for Smith Center, but they went 3-0, and they are now 9-0 on the season. They beat Clay Center in three in their first match and then came back and won their next two in just two sets. They beat Thayer Central and Beloit to wrap up the tournament there. Beloit went 0-3 on the day in that very tough pool. Lost to Thayer Central and Clay Center both in three. And as we mentioned, they fell to Smith Center in two there yesterday, or Saturday, I should say, in Belleville. So full scores from those matches can be found at ncksports.com. Also, the Tescott Volleyball Quad, we had three area teams competing there. So when Lucas went 3-0, winning over Rock Hills, Tescott, and Lincoln, all in three. So when Lucas is now 13-1 on the season. Rock Hills went 2-1. They beat Lincoln in two and beat Tescott in three. And then Lincoln went 1-2. They beat Tescott in two in the other match. And Tescott was 0-3 on the weekend. So, again, all the scores for those matches are at ncksports.com. Now, coming up here this evening, we have on ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel, Beloit JV football at Concordia. Starts at 5 o'clock here this evening. So, Trojan fans, if you'd like to watch the JV football game, that's at ncksports.com here this evening.
All right. The Chiefs win yesterday. Consider this. At one point yesterday during the game against the Chargers, and the defense didn't play well first half, gave up, 350 yards in the first half? But yet held them to 14 points. Mm-hmm. That's the most important number. And they're only down 8 at halftime. Chiefs had to feel extremely fortunate to be down just 8 at halftime. The Chiefs were without the following defenders at one point yesterday. Think about this for a second. Alex Okafor, Mike Pinnell suspended, Okafor out hurt, Kalen Saunders out hurt, Damian Wilson and Anthony Hinchins, their two linebackers, had to leave the game, nicked up, came back in the second half. Vashawn Breland suspended, Antonio Hamilton got hurt. He's a backup corner, and Charvarius Ward, your two starters from last year, Breland and Ward, both didn't play in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chiefs were without the two starting corners last year. Legarius Sneed made another interception, which, by the way, somebody had texted me and said that where the Chargers lost the game was when Herbert threw the pass when he should have ran for a first down. Well, you could say that. There was a lot of time left in the game when that happened. I mean, that was, I think, what was it, 12 and a half minutes or something like that when he threw the pick, if I remember correct? What was it? I'd have to double-check.
I don't know the exact number.
Well, no, it was in the third quarter. It was in the third quarter because the Chargers came the other way, and then the Chiefs went down. They went 95 yards and scored a touchdown. In that situation, you don't know if the Chargers are going to score a touchdown, but they would have kicked a field goal, and that would have put them up, 20-9? So, yeah, you could say that was a play. I still think the Chiefs down 11 going to come back no matter what. That's the way I feel with Mahomes and this team. Now, Chargers, score a touchdown, 24-9. I don't know. I just believe in Mahomes so much that the Chiefs make the plays in crunch time when they have to. But, yes, there's no doubt that Justin Herbert, a rookie who played very well, by the way, yesterday, who didn't even know he was going to start. Anthony Lynn, if you're smart, you just say here's the keys to the offense. Tyrod Taylor's not your long-term answer. And you let Justin Herbert be the quarterback the rest of the year. To me, that's a no-brainer. And somehow, some way, I think Tyrod Taylor is going to be the starter if he's healthy because, there's a reason we picked him as a starter. Mm-hmm. Did you not see what Justin Herbert did? Okay? He played very well. He gives you the run-pass option. He's a little stronger quarterback. He's got more potential. Tyrod Taylor is a game manager. I think it's a no-brainer that Justin Herbert is their quarterback. And I bet you if you polled everybody on that team, they would say Justin Herbert's our quarterback. So, to me, you go with Justin Herbert. And he played well. He made a couple mistakes, which, he's a rookie. First start, what are you expecting to play? Yes, he could have run for the first down. He could have run for about 15 yards on that play. And, he threw late over the middle. Mahomes does that a lot, and it works out for him.
Mm-hmm.
But Justin Herbert's not Mahomes. Nobody is. And that was a mistake, no doubt. No doubt. He should have ran for the first down, trying to make too big of a play. Rookie mistake. Happens. Brett Favre did that when he was 15 years in the league. So, even veterans do it. So that was a big mistake. The other one was he went the wrong way on a handoff there when they were trying to score a touchdown. They had first and goal at the 5 and then got conservative again. See, I put this on Anthony Lynn and L.A. Charger coaching staff. You cannot be super conservative against the Chiefs. You just can't.
No.
When will some of these coaches figure it out? I'm tickled pink. You know, Bill O'Brien did it in the playoff game. 24-0. 21, was it 21-0? 21. He had 4.5 yards. You had the Chiefs on their heels. He settled for a field goal. He was going to go for it, and he settled for a field goal. That was like a win for the Chiefs. That was a huge mistake. I mean, you're up 21 or 24. It's still a 3-score game. I mean, I'm sitting here right away praying that Bill O'Brien doesn't go for it in that playoff game, and he didn't. I'm like, thank you. Like, the Chiefs got to sit here and go, all right, we held them to 3. We'll take it. Man, when are coaches going to learn? I mean, you go for it. And if you don't get it, you were still up 21-0. Well, we're worried about momentum shifting. It shifted when you kicked off after you made the field goal and Hardman returned it 60 yards. I mean, sometimes coaches they're not as aggressive as they need to be, but you need to understand who you're playing. You're playing a team that can score in a second. I mean, this offense can be dead for 3 quarters. Ask the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl. They can be dead for 3 quarters and come to life on one play, on a 3rd-and-15 wasp to Tyreek Hill in the Super Bowl that changed the whole complexion of that game. Do these coaches not watch football? Do they not understand that 15's on the other side? Do they not understand the Chiefs have all these weapons? Because I don't get it. You have a chance for a kill shot in the playoff game. Bill O'Brien chose not to. But then he went for a fake punt.
Yeah.
So it's like you're halfway aggressive, but halfway not. You know, John Harbaugh last year in Kansas City went for it multiple times, and then all of a sudden, 4th-and-5 at his own 40, decided that was too many yards to get. So he didn't go full out on the 4th down, which I think he will next Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? And then yesterday, Anthony Lynn, you got 1st and goal at the 5, direct handoff. And I know the Chargers run the ball fairly well. I get that. How about some play action? 1st down and goal, I would have been thinking, or 2nd down goal, play at least one play action. Herbert showed he could run the ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last play, 3rd and goal, that's when you're expecting possible play action because you become predictable. 3rd and goal from the 4 or 5, whatever it was. Listen, the Chiefs are more prone to be ready for a play action on 3rd and goal than they are 1st and 2nd goal.
Yeah.
And then he turns, hands it off the wrong way, which blew up the play, and then Herbert, you know, was done. And that was that. And so they settle for a field goal. It's amazing to me how coaches in the National Football League forget who they're playing. And as a Chiefs fan, I am thankful for those coaches. Thank you, Bill O'Brien,
yes.
And thank you, Anthony Lynn, and thank you, you know, Vance Joseph, who's no longer with the Broncos. When you're running it down the Chiefs' throat the last couple of years and you decide suddenly to just chuck it, why, I don't know. You know, it's amazing to me how these coaches are paid so much money, and I know that they're smarter than me, all right? They got there. They're smarter than me. They make more money than me. So be it. But I am amazed that they're that smart and can get to that level in the National Football League and then 4th and 1 have no kahunas to go for it. It just blows me away. Yeah. I'm not going to go for a 4th and 0.5 yards in a playoff game up 21-0, but I'm going to run a fake punt up 24-7 in my own territory. Are you in? Are you? It's like you're thinking about going all in at the poker table, and you're like, you just can't quite make up your mind. Figure it out and go for it. Have some conviction. And I think Harbaugh will do that Monday night when the Ravens play the Chiefs. The Ravens owe the Chiefs a few. More on that game later on this week. But the Chiefs are without all those defensive players, and the Chargers are still held to 14 points. You have 4th and 1 at your own 34-yard line. Anthony Lynn, help me out. You're the coach of the Chargers. You're much smarter than me and Dusty and everybody out there listening to the show right now. Why didn't you go for it on 4th and 1 at your own 34 in overtime when the Chiefs offense had suddenly got going in the 4th quarter and his defense was gassed? And we saw that in overtime, did we not? I mean, for crying out loud, Joey Bosa had to sit out like 4 straight plays. He was so tired.
Yeah, we could consider going forward, but, you know, it was a little bit more than one. We need to get a stop on defense. Could have went forward, and they had the ball right there and could have kicked the field goal and won the game a lot sooner. But I did consider going for it, but I didn't. I went for it a couple other times in the game, but at that point in time, I thought I'd give us a chance to extend the game, and it didn't work out.
Here's another reason you go for it. If you don't go for it, you punt the ball. The Chiefs need, what, 3 first downs, and Butker can kick a 60-yarder. So they're even in scoring range even more than most teams are with their field goal kicker. And you can say, well, wait, hold on a second. If they don't get it, then they can just pull out Butker and kick a 51-yarder. Yeah, but my point is you have control. You have the ball. So don't just give the ball away.
Yeah.
And that's what you do when you punt, obviously. I don't get it. Can you explain to me why coaches do this stuff?
The comment, extend the game in overtime.
There's only 10 minutes.
I don't even care if you're like, your goal is to kick it deep and run the clock out and get a tie.
Yeah.
Extend the game in overtime is something nobody should ever say.
You can't really extend it. It's 10 minutes.
I know. You have the
football. They each had one possession in overtime. That's it.
And it's like, it's in your possession right now.
Yes.
You don't know if you're ever going to get this back. You can't extend the game in overtime because all they need now is a field goal to win.
Right.
They don't need the touchdown like you did.
That's right.
If the Chargers kick a field goal and make it, the Chiefs get the chance. But if the Chargers go down and score a touchdown, the Chiefs don't get the ball. And when you give it to the second team, all they need is 3. You don't get the ball. But there's no extending the game. In my mind, if I'm a coach,
right? Oh yeah,
and I'm thinking like that. But to say we wanted to extend the game, what you think your defense, the way they were playing, was just going to like force a 3-and-out and make them punt?
Well, the way they played the first half, yes, but it was
at that point of the game,
exactly. And I just can't explain it. I really can't. And here's the other thing. Here's the difference between the Justin Herbert play. You know that if he had run the ball, we don't know if the Chargers would have got a field goal. We don't know if the Chargers would have got a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if they would have thrown a pick later or fumbled the ball. We don't. But they're in good position to probably at least have a field goal. But here's the difference between the two situations. This is why I say Anthony Lynn's decision not to go for it on 4th-and-1 basically decided the game. Here's why. Because Justin Herbert, let's say he doesn't throw that pick. Chargers score. There's still a fourth quarter to play.
Yeah.
Whereas here, the game is tied. And all the Chiefs need, as you accurately pointed out, was 3 points. That's all they needed, with a guy that can kick it 60-some yards, which he proved yesterday. So you don't trust an offense that had been running the ball well on the Chiefs most of the game. Mm-hmm. You don't trust either your rookie quarterback, or you don't trust your offensive line, or you don't trust your running back. You don't trust your offense. You're going to put it in the hands of your defense against the Super Bowl MVP, the best quarterback in the league, and the best offense in the league. Aren't you playing with fire that you held them to 20 up to that point anyway?
Yes.
I'm not saying I know. I'd have all the answers. To me, that was a no-brainer. You automatically go for it. I mean, Tony Romo was one of the best in the business right away. He's like, you have to go for this, don't you? Nope. Not if you're Anthony Lynn. Once again, thank you. That helps the Chiefs. That's why Andy Reid's a better coach. Because Andy Reid went for it on 4th-and-1, didn't he?
Yeah.
And it worked, barely. I don't understand giving it to Darwin Thompson, but... it worked.
Yeah, I was a little nervous about
I was.
Right when he turned and gave it to Darwin Thompson. Like, oh, boy, I hope we get a good push.
Oh, yeah, because Darrell Williams got hurt, so that's why Thompson. I was like, whoa, I would be Elaire more than Thompson, but okie dokie. But it worked out, you know. So the Chiefs, what they did once Anthony Lynn decided, I don't want the football, I'm going to go for the tie, apparently. 13 plays, 39 yards, game-winning field goal. Chiefs did have to overcome a few third downs. Then a 4th down, of course, which, by the way, the Chiefs went for it and got it. when will teams learn not to jump offsides against Patrick Mahomes? I mean, Mahomes does this all the time, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
He has that hard count. And what I love about Mahomes, Alex Smith would do hard counts, but then he'd still dump it off. It's a free play. Take the shot.
All the time.
Mahomes always chucks it deep down the field because you might get pass interference on top of that, or you might get a great bounce, and he doesn't care. You know, I don't know how many times I see Mahomes throw a pass, and sometimes I'm not aware that the team jumped offsides, and I'm like, oh, goodness, that's a pick. And then right away they say there's a flag, and right away I'm like, negated another Mahomes interception.
Yeah.
But Mahomes is so smart. I've heard people say, well, all those interceptions Mahomes, you know, he's thrown – but they erased due to penalty. He's really lucky. No, he's not, because what he does is he draws you offsides. He knows he got the flag. He's looking to get the flag, and he chucks it downfield, and he's like, who cares if it's intercepted? Because I know I'm going to get another play. And that's what he did yesterday.
Yeah.
And then Mecole Hardman decided to have a brain cramp and not even touch the guy and just stand there, which Kelsey ripped him for that, and rightfully so. That's what the leader should do when guys aren't paying attention. That could have been costly. But Mahomes is that smart at the age of 25 now to do that. But when would the Chargers learn? They jumped offsides, what, 4 times? Yeah. Four times. You said a third and eight to a third and three. I mean, hello, now it's a lot. It's pretty easy.
Pay this guy all that money, and he doesn't know to not jump.
Exactly. Exactly. As we know, it's, you know, it's the Chargers are a good team. Okay? They are a good team. Andy Reid says it's always a challenge when you play the Chargers.
It was a tough team win, is what it was. Seems like every time we play these guys, it comes down to something like this. And, you know, I was proud of our guys for battling through, and things weren't going very well for us on either side of the ball, but the guys rallied it. And I got the utmost respect for Anthony Lynn and his coaches, Gus Bradley and the guys. You talk about coaches that work against you, and I know their schemes and their players and how they play that those things. It's incredible.
The Chargers are really a tough challenge. The Chiefs have won, what, 12 of the last 13 against the Chargers? The only one they lost is when Rivers scored there in Kansas City, and they got a two-point because the defense was so atrocious. We said it on Friday. We talked about the show. This game scares me or worries me because there is no Phillip Rivers to bail you out because he's going to throw four picks. And that's what – I mean, Herbert's better than Rivers. I mean, in regards to the Chiefs matchup, they don't know much about Herbert. I mean, that was a tough adjustment because there's nothing really on film. You're prepared for Tyrod Taylor, but Taylor's not going to throw four picks in a game. So, you know, that the big interception by Snead was huge, and that was a bad throw and bad decision by Justin Herbert. He's going to learn not to make that play in this league. I think the Chargers have a pretty good quarterback there, better than I thought when they drafted him. So that could be a team. The Chargers might be the biggest challenger to the Chiefs because they had the Chiefs on the ropes yesterday. There's no doubt about that. You know, the Chiefs can get better. Andy Reid says the Chiefs, they're a team that, you know, there's room for improvement, but that Charger defense is still pretty good.
Defensively, we got to keep working on our tackling. These are early season things that you see. You know, we got to do better there. Snead came up with a big turnover for us. It was, you know, really helped us kind of get things going in the right direction. Great defensive front. I mean, that's what they have. And the one thing our guys do is they kept battling right down to the end. And when we needed big plays, we were able to get big plays. When we were able to protect and, you know, allowed Patrick to pop out and run. And those were also big things there. But I just thought the guys reached down and battled. Both teams were exhausted, I think.
I would agree with that. And the Chiefs, as I said, a trait of a winning team or a Super Bowl championship team is that your team and your players step up when they need the plays in big-time moments late in games, and that's what the Chiefs did yesterday.
They bared down, and they made big plays down the stretch, you know, a number of different guys. And I didn't mention our young running back and the things that he did, our defense stepping up and just putting the hammer down, you know, at the end there. So giving us an opportunity to win the game, you know, Badger, just getting after guys and making sure that we're doing the right thing, especially these young corners. We just did it with two young corners, man, and what a great opportunity for them. So we expect when you step in that you raise your game and let's go, man. Let's go. And you got to see that today.
And the Chiefs were preparing for Tyrod Taylor and got Justin Herbert. Here's Reid on the Charger quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel bad for Tyrod. I mean, being hurt, I know he'd look forward to playing us. And, you know, we get the young kid, and he did a great job, I thought. I thought he managed the game well, and they ran the ball well, and then he made plays where he needed to. He just, you know, he had a turnover in there. So, you know, those things can come back and bite you a little bit. And that's what ended up happening.
All right, so this game, the Chiefs' offense struggled. Patrick Mahomes very frustrated with the start to this ball game.
I think I was so frustrated at the beginning of the game because I knew it was just me that was killing the team. I mean, guys were getting open. The line was giving me enough time, but I wasn't making the throws in the right spots. And so I take that upon myself. I have to find a way to start better, not put ourselves in a hole like that. And so it's not so hard at the end of the game.
And took some time to settle down, says Mahomes.
Early in the game, especially that first quarter, I think I just wasn't playing up to par. There was stuff there. We had throws there, and I just wasn't making the right read, or I was making bad throws. And then as the game went on, I mean, that D-line is going to get through. I mean, they have great players over there. And after I got hit a couple times, it kind of settled me back in, and I was able to find a way at the end of the game to put up enough points to get the win.
Chiefs are down 17-9, and you know what? Every time I watch Mahomes roll to his right on the run, I'm like, good things are going to happen. Good things are going to happen. When he just slings that sucker down there, I'm like, good things are going to happen. I automatically, when he rolls right on the run, doesn't set his feet, His fundamentals are not good. But I just know with that howitzer of an arm, good things are going to happen. That's what happened yesterday. He rolls right, and he found Tyreek Hill.
Mahomes is stationed on the left hash, right foot in front of the left. Darwin Thompson, the running back, with him. He fakes to him and now sprints to the right. He is throwing long down the field. He wants Tyreek Hill, makes the catch and rolls into the end zone. On the right side, touchdown, Kansas City. And the Chiefs hit the Chargers with the 54-yard bomb to the cheetah.
Quite a pass, nice catch, and then the tumble into the end zone by Tyreek Hill. Made it 17-15 read on that play.
I just thought that that was a spectacular throw, and then for 10 to make that grab, I mean, that was a great catch. And those two have a special connection between them, and we keep seeing it week after week, year after year here. So it's, you know, it's time-tested, and 10 was exhausted. I mean, he ran like a center fielder there in soccer, so a midfielder, and I mean, he put in a lot of miles. And, you know, I just he reached down deep and kept it going.
Well, that was pretty impressive stuff by Patrick Mahomes to Tyreek Hill. And then the next play is one that doesn't get enough credit, and that was the two-point try, because it was designed to go Hilaire or Kelsey. And then Hardman came across and then just stopped for a second, and the defender went by, and Mahomes threw it, as he always does, unorthodox, kind of sidearm, and then across the field, all right, back to his left. And Hardman, it was behind him, and he had, and it was thrown pretty good speed, and he just had Velcro hands and caught it. That was a very difficult catch, and was not, and that Mahomes went to basically his third or fourth read on a two-point try. And they got that to tie the game. If they don't get that, maybe the game ends a little bit differently. Don't know. I still think the Chiefs find a way to win the ball game, but that was a pretty crazy play that doesn't really get a lot of attention because of Butker's heroics and Mahomes to Hill and all that other stuff. And here's Mahomes on what he thought were some of the key moments of the game.
As far as the field goal, I had 100% confidence in Butker every time he's on the field. And then the run, obviously 3rd and 20. At that time, when I took off running, I was more worried about trying to get in field goal range to get Butker to be able to tie the game. But then I was able to get the first down, and we were almost able to kind of put a touchdown in there before regulation ended. And then the throw to Tyreek was a play that we had game planned for. We wanted to run it earlier in the game, but we couldn't get to the right situation to run it. And so we were able to get it off, and I just put it out there as far as I can on the run, and Tyreek made a heck of a catch in double coverage.
So much is talked about with Mahomes and his arm, but we saw just unbelievable touchdown run last year in the playoffs, which was just huge in the AFC title game. He doesn't have, like, great speed, but he picked up some key first downs yesterday on third down. The one he mentions, 3rd and 20, you know, at the Chargers 45. You know the Chiefs are going to pass, and they brought pressure off the edge, so he just steps up. And like he said, I wasn't trying to get 21 yards. I was just trying to get maybe 10 to get in field goal range. And then he knows where the marker is. He looked like he was going to start the slide, and he was like, wait a minute, I can get this first down. Almost you could tell he's changed his mind. He got the first down. There's another time where he got a first down scrambling to his left, another time where he took a shot, which put them about half a yard shy of a first down, which allowed Andy Reid to make the decision to go for it and pick up the first down. You know, if he just goes out of bounds 3 yards short, the Chiefs probably aren't going for it.
Yeah.
So Mahomes knows when to lower the shoulder. He knows when to go try to get that first down. And that was a huge play, that 21-yard run on 3rd down and 20. It's also demoralizing to a defense that got you in that situation. And you're worried about the deep pass like he did in the Super Bowl to Hill. And then he just beats you with his legs right up the middle because you can't have a spy on him because you don't have enough defenders. You got to keep your eye on Hill and Kelsey. And even Robinson's a good receiver. And Hilaire out of the backfield. And I know Watkins got banged up and didn't come back in on what really should have been a play that should have been reviewed. Quite honestly, that was a helmet-to-helmet shot that they kind of missed, and so did the broadcasters, by the way, and the TV crew. And then they focused all on Tyreek Hill taking his helmet off, which should have been a penalty, by the way. They're right about that, but should have been a penalty when Watkins almost got concussed. Maybe he did. Don't know if he'll play Monday night against the Ravens. But here's Mahomes on his rushing success.
they were playing coverage. I think it was just they were playing coverage. They were getting depth, and our offensive line was giving me time, but I mean they were getting so depth that we couldn't find ways to get open. And so the thing about them playing coverage and being so deep is that they don't have a guy for me, and so I was able to run and get some yards downfield. And so it's just trying to find whatever way to win. I think that's the biggest thing. Teams are going to stay back and guard our receivers. I'm going to find ways with my feet to make stuff happen.
You know, Mahomes is not a fragile guy. I mean, he's a pretty good-sized dude. He's put on muscle and weight since he's coming in the league. He knew that. Had a few injuries at Texas Tech, but he is definitely stronger and bigger, and we know his work regimen and his work ethic. He wants to stay on top of the football landscape. Mahomes yesterday, he settled in all right. 27 of 47 for 302, two touchdowns. Here's some amazing numbers. In the month of September, Patrick Mahomes has never lost a football game. Do you know what his touchdown interception ratio is in the month of September?
Does he have maybe one interception?
28 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Now, I didn't even think he had any, but I was like, that doesn't seem right. Yes, maybe he had one. But
28 touchdowns, no interceptions in the month of September.
I would not have ever guessed the number of touchdowns, but
isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
That's insane.
It is insane.
I mean, some people might overuse that. But that's insane. 28 touchdowns, no interceptions, and is now on his third year starting quarterback.
And they played good teams in September.
Oh, yeah.
The Ravens have been one of those.
Yeah.
And they're going to play on Monday night. And that might be where that streak where he might throw a pick and maybe the Chiefs' 11-game winning streak might come to an end. I think a lot of people are going to take the Ravens in this game. I think people are going to pick the Ravens to win this game. And I think Mahomes, with the lights are on and they're shining the brightest, I think your stars shine the brightest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not underestimating the Chiefs. The only problem I have with the Chiefs against the Ravens is they're missing some key pieces.
Yes.
Because of suspensions in particular. And then Frank Clark missed part of yesterday too, by the way, due to an illness. So the Chiefs were without some key guys yesterday. Without their starting corners from last year, without their best pass rush end, Frank Clark, he is their best pass rush end. Jones can rush up the middle. They're missing their DN and Okafor. I mean, they're missing their two starting DNs. They're missing their two starting corners yesterday. And they lost their backup running back, Darrell Williams, which isn't a major thing. And then Watkins got hurt in the third quarter, and they still won the game. So, once again, how do you beat this team? I think the Ravens have the best formula to beat this team. More on that in a little bit. So Mahomes, 6 rushes, 54 yards. He led the team in rushing. Hilaire was held in check, 10 carries for 38 yards. You know, Justin Herbert looked pretty good, as we said. He might be the future for the Chargers. Keep that in mind down the line. But the Chiefs did not play great yesterday and still found a way to win, and that's a sign of a great team. That's certainly shorthanded in some key spots, no doubt. Danny Welniak will be with us, our guest tomorrow on the Sports Ticket, to talk about the Chiefs' win over the Chargers and look ahead to the big showdown with the Ravens coming up on Monday night. Patrick Mahomes is not the best quarterback in the National Football League right now. Agree or disagree, Dusty?
Just the way he started, I'd probably agree.
Okay. I'm basing it off of the first two games of the year. First game, Mahomes didn't happen to do as much because the Chiefs had the running game with Hilaire. But if you want to talk about who's playing the best quarterback of anybody in the league right now, I'd say Mahomes is still right there because he's not forcing it. He's drawing teams offside with a hard cadence. He's running the ball when it's given to him. He didn't play very well yesterday in the first half. The guy that's on fire and is the best quarterback in the league right now, through two games, the MVP of this league after two games, which I know there's still 14 to play. I get it. That would not be Lamar Jackson. That would not be Patrick Mahomes. It would be Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is on fire. Here are his numbers through two games. 52 out of 63 throwing the ball. That means only 11 incompletions, and some of those are drops by his receivers. Mm-hmm. 9 touchdowns. He threw for 5 last night, and they needed every one of them against the Patriots, and his team is 2-0. The Seahawks were Dusty and my pick to make it to the Super Bowl at NFC. It looks pretty decent now, although the Seahawks do have some questions on defense. Mm-hmm. But they beat the Patriots last night 35-30. Russell Wilson right now is playing the best quarterback of anybody in the league. Now, it's not to say by the end of the year Mahomes isn't your MVP or Lamar Jackson or Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Rodgers is playing great too. But if you look at the numbers and you look what this guy's doing for his team, it's all in his arm right now. And Russell Wilson's delivering. Absolutely delivering in spades. He's tremendous last night.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous last night. Just insanely good. Insanely good. Not bad for a guy undersized and can't play in the league. Remember that? that's why I don't get caught up in all this stuff every year.
You got this really undersized that's playing down in Arizona that has his
Kyler Murray,
team 2-0 right now. Kyler's playing real well. He's not, you know, he's not at that level right now of Russell Wilson, but man, he's really done some good things here.
We were talking about sleeper team before the year, and I mentioned the Cardinals. I didn't have the guts to pick them as a playoff team.
Because what we said, they're the division they're in.
Right, exactly. But the 49ers have tons of injuries. The Seahawks are legit, as we know. The Rams, you know, the Rams are 2-0.
2-0.
You know?
There's three teams 2-0, and none of them are the team that made it to the Super Bowl
Yeah, usually your Super Bowl loser doesn't make it back. The Super Bowl loser seems to have more of a hangover than the Super Bowl champion. So let's recap football from week 2 in the NFL. The Bears, they're 2-0 for the fifth time since 1993. They beat the Giants 17-13. Injuries was a huge story yesterday. Saquon Barkley tore his ACL, it looks like. What a shame. Mm-hmm. That kid is a stud. He's done for the year, it appears. The Cowboys, I was sitting here going, well, they're going to be 0-2. Way to go. Dallas, once again, overrated. And they are. But the Falcons apparently just know how to blow games. Them and the Lions are just two teams that refuse to win. The Falcons yesterday, if you didn't see the onside kick, by the way, what were they doing?
It's like
they didn't know the rules. It's like they thought they couldn't touch it for 10 yards.
They could actually touch it before it goes 10 yards.
They had three players that could have grabbed it and fell on it.
Just jump on it.
Unbelievable.
What's the worst that's going to happen if you try to jump on it? Nothing worse than what actually happened.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, what are you doing, man? Just jump on the football.
I think you got to sit here.
I was baffled. Like, these are pros on special teams. Just jump on the football.
You can blame Dan Quinn all you want, the coach of the Falcons, and, you know, the Falcons with that huge lead, you know, against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. But who you blame is a special teams coach. Because if he didn't get through to his players that are on the front line on onside kick situation, that dude, go get the ball, then that guy maybe needs to find a new job.
Yeah.
Or he's not getting through. And now maybe he does and says everything right as a coach, and those guys just had brain farts. Yeah. I don't know. But that was horrible. I mean, what are you doing? It almost looked like the Falcons players had money on the game. Like, hey, go here. Here you go. That was crazy. Cowboys so lucky to win yesterday. But, hey. You make your own luck. They didn't give up. Dak Prescott, 450 yards passing, 3 touchdown runs. Pay the man, Jerry Jones. Pay him.
I was reading everything on Twitter, like, what a great onside kick. And I'm like,
it was a pretty cool kick.
It was a good kick, but I'm like, there's three black jerseys. Just jump on it.
I think it was the ball was going so slow, spinning, that the Falcons were mesmerized in a trance.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like they're hypnotized. The Packers rolled the Lions 42-21. Lions actually had a decent lead, but the Lions can't hold leads. We know that. The Vikings are 0-2 as they lose to the Colts 28-11. Jonathan Taylor, the first Colts rookie with over 100 yards rushing since 2012. The Bills got by the Dolphins 31-28. You know, we talk a lot about the Ravens and the Chiefs, but you know who probably the next best team is in the AFC? It's the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. If Josh Allen keeps playing the way he's been playing, look out. I didn't see this coming. Josh Allen, 417 passing yards, 4 touchdowns yesterday. And he can run with the ball, too. 49ers beat the Jets 31-13, but they lost their starting running back to injury, their quarterback to injury, their stud defensive end in Bosa to an injury. They already missing Dee Ford to injury, and then they lost Solomon Thomas to injury. They lost, like, 5 starters yesterday, and they still won, but there's questions going forward for the 49ers with all the injuries.
Yeah, they're not going to play the Jets every week.
No, they're not. The Rams beat the Eagles 37-19. You know, I thought that for a moment it was going to be the typical NFC East thing. Eagles, Cowboys, 0-2. First team to 8 wins gets in the playoffs. But then the Cowboys were, like, you know, lucked out, helped out by the Falcons, and they win. And the Eagles are 0-2. The Broncos are now 0-2 and lost Drew Lock. He's out 2 to 6 weeks with AC joint issue being hit yesterday. And the Steelers now 2-0. And that's a team you got to watch out for. It maybe give the Ravens some trouble in their division. They'll play twice. The Buccaneers beat the Panthers. Tom Brady's first win as a Buck. Second player in NFL history with 75,000 passing yards. He didn't look great, but he looked better. It's a work in progress there. His timing with his receivers and his tight ends is still off.
Mm-hmm.
Don't judge Tom Brady through the first few games. Don't judge Tom Brady what he does with the Bucs until we get to, I will say, November.
He probably should have learned that when he was with the Patriots to not judge him through the first 2 or 3 games.
Remember when they wanted to bench him after the Chiefs blew him out in game 4 that one year? That's crazy. Bucs win 31-17. Panthers are 0-2. The Titans are 2-0. They got by the Jaguars 33-30. First time in 12 years the Titans are 2-0. And Dusty mentioned the Arizona Cardinals. They're fun to watch. Hopkins and Murray 30-15 over the Washington football team. The Ravens are 2-0. Lamar Jackson, 28 touchdowns and just one interception in the last nine regular season games. Of course, he imploded in the playoff game last year. Ravens beat the Texans 33-16. Texans saying, thank you, NFL, for giving us this start of the season with the Chiefs and then the Ravens. The Chiefs, of course, in overtime, 23-20. Chiefs 2-0. Chargers had every opportunity to win the game. And the Seahawks, as we said, 35-30 over the Patriots. You know, Patriots are still legit, man. They're legit. Cam Newton last night still played well. He gives you a running version of a quarterback who can also throw. Russell Wilson, 9 passing touchdowns in the first two games of the season. Guess who the Chiefs play after the Monday nighter against the Ravens? The Patriots. So you look at this Chiefs schedule early on. I mean, the Texans, they won pretty easily, but I still think that's going to be a good team by the end of the year. Chargers look improved, especially if Justin Herbert's a quarterback, and a good defense. The Ravens, we know, they're legit. And then you got the Patriots in week 4, and they'll come to Kansas City. That's a tough first 4 games. And then the Raiders at home and then at Buffalo. So you look at the Chiefs' first 6 games, they're going to take on all the top contenders in the AFC in the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So
throw them into the fire. Let's see what happens. You're the champs. Go out and do it.
True. Only thing is they won't have Breeland. Well, Pinnell will be back for the Raven game, but Breeland will be out for the Ravens and Patriots.
Yeah, that's what concerned me a little bit yesterday. Mm-hmm. Was the defense started to get depleted. Yes. That's the only thing that was creeping into my mind, that they might not be able to pull this off because there's so many young guys just inexperienced on the defense, and tackling was atrocious. And I'm just sitting here like, oh, my goodness, what do we – and then, yeah, Patrick Mahomes.
The last time the Chiefs played overtime game, they never got the football. It was the AFC title game against the Patriots. And when the Chargers won the toss yesterday, I'm like, okay, this could happen again. The Chargers just run the ball down the Chiefs' throats. But here's the difference. The Chiefs' defense is better than that team that played the Patriots, and they have a better coordinator, and it didn't happen because the Chiefs took away the run in overtime, didn't they? I mean, they were like, listen, we're going to make Justin Herbert beat us with his arm. And that was a good game plan by Steve Spagnuolo. Even though the Chiefs were depleted and they gave up a lot of yards, they came through when they needed it. I mean, let's be honest. Mahomes and the Chiefs don't win this game yesterday. The Chiefs' defense, they held the Chargers to 2 field goals in the second half in overtime. So they did what they had to do when they had to do it. Monday Night Football tonight, Saints and the Raiders. That's in Vegas. First home game for the Las Vegas Raiders. And both teams are 1-0. We'll preview the Raven-Chiefs game Monday night later on this week. We'll talk more about Danny Wilniak, our guest, tomorrow on the Sports Ticket. College football over the weekend. Oklahoma State was the only Big 12 team in action, but you could argue they weren't. They beat Tulsa 16-7. That was a horrible game to watch. Just brutal to watch. Both teams with penalties. Both teams, it was just brutal. Spencer Sanders got hurt. That's a big blow for Oklahoma State. True freshman ended up starting at the end of the game. He hadn't even practiced the last 2 weeks. Did you know that? Because of contract tracing? I mean, he did okay.
Yeah.
Sitting everything. They win 16-7 over Tulsa. But in fairness to Tulsa, Oklahoma State, they've had practice, not practice.
Yeah.
COVID, it was very rough. But Oklahoma State avoided an upset, but didn't look very good there for a while. I was serious. I was almost tweeting out there, the Big 12 should just go ahead and say nobody else is playing except Oklahoma. Just call it good. Let Oklahoma play and cancel the rest of the season. It did not look good, but Oklahoma State did win. The Royals were on a roll. Winners 7-8. They went to Milwaukee, and that roll is over. They were swept by the Brewers. 3 straight. Salvador Perez, though, man, I tell you, he's hitting the cover off the ball. He's had a hit in every game since he's come back off the IL. Has 8 homers in the shortened season. And remember, he's missed a lot of time due to injury. Salvi coming through with a 2-run homer yesterday.
Salvi blasts it to left field. And that is gone into the second deck. And the Royals keep it interesting in the ninth inning.
Yeah, but they did lose 5-3. Brad Keller did a great job against everybody in the lineup except against Daniel Vogelbach. Daniel Vogelbach yesterday's 2 swings of the bat. That's the 5 runs the Brewers got. He had a 2-run homer and a 3-run homer. He single-handedly beat Brad Keller. 5-3 was the final. Royals now 21-32, of course, not going to make the playoffs. They only have 7 games left in this shortened season. Carlos Hernandez on the hill. Once again, one of those young pitchers, the future for the Royals, against St. Louis tonight. It's Cardinals come to town for a series at 7:05. U.S. Open, as it's normally called. Bryson DeChambeau is your champion.
This for a final par save. DeChambeau is indeed a U.S. Open champion at Wingfoot.
DeChambeau passed 21-year-old Matthew Wolff, the 54-hole leader, yesterday. He was the only player yesterday on the golf course to shoot under par. And DeChambeau got it done, his first major. And he's a strong dude, man. He reflects on his first major win.
This for a final.
Amazing but surreal. It's been a lot of hard work, and I got to say thanks to my whole team. You know, Brett, Tim, my caddy, works his butt off every single day for me. It's not going to hit me till tonight. But I will say that my parents have given so much up for me. I mean, there were times that I went to school without any lunch money, and we had to, you know, make bologna sandwiches and didn't have anything to eat. You know, we had some very, very difficult times, but every single day they always wanted the best for me, and they always gave me the opportunity to go golf, go practice, and go get better. And this one's for my parents, it's for Mike Shy, it's for Chris, it's for my whole team. All the work, all the blood, sweat, and tears that we put into it, it just means the world to me.
Bryson DeChambeau, U.S. Open golf champion, the favorite, Dustin Johnson, struggled. Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods didn't even make the cut. It was a tough course, but DeChambeau is clearly the best golfer on that course over the course of the 4 days. NBA playoffs, boy, the Nuggets, they're right there, man. Series is going to be tied 1-1 until this happened.
Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! Scored as a good three-point basket. They will take a look, but Anthony Davis is going to send the Lakers to a 2-0 series lead.
Lakers are wearing the Black Mamba jerseys that Kobe Bryant designed before he passed away on January 26th in a helicopter crash. They were wearing those jerseys yesterday. Frank Vogel, head coach of the Lakers, after the game, talking about Anthony Davis's three-pointer to win the ballgame at the buzzer to give the Lakers a 2-0 lead in the best of seven in the Western Conference Finals. Vogel said, and I quote, "That's a shot Kobe Bryant would make. To me, AD coming off, just flying to the wing like that, catch and shoot with the biggest game on the line of our season, nothing but net. It's a Mamba shot." Yeah, it was. It really was. Davis with 31. He scored the Lakers' last 10 points, had 22 in the second half. The Nuggets were in trouble. They were down by 16, but those pesky Nuggets came right back. Nikola Jokic scored 11 straight, including a bucket that gave the Nuggets a 103-102 lead with 20 seconds to go. Alex Caruso missed a three-pointer. Then Jamal Murray blocked a Danny Green shot out of bounds with 2.1 to play, but then that set up the exciting game-winning shot by Anthony Davis. Apparently a little miscommunication on the final play between Mason Plumlee and Jokic on the pick and switch. And Jokic says, that's my fault. Jokic had 30 points. Murray had 25. And I just want everybody to understand, the Nuggets have the Lakers right where they want them. Absolutely. Lakers are up 2-0 in the series. The Nuggets will win game three. And then they'll lose game four. And it'll be 3-1 Lakers. And then the Nuggets will be ready to win three straight and be the first team in sports history in any sport to come back from 3-1 deficits, not once, not twice, but three times. Mark my words. Take it to the bank. Bet all your money and your mortgage on it. I'm kidding. I said the Lakers in seven. I'll stand by it. I'll say Lakers. I'll stick with Lakers in seven. I think you said Lakers in six.
Six, yeah.
Yeah. We've seen the Nuggets in trouble against the Jazz. Down 3-1. Rallied. Came back. Won game five. Went on to win the series. Clippers down 15 in game five. Down, what was it, 16 in game six or whatever it was, and then in game seven they're down double digits in the first half. The Nuggets, that's a tough loss, but for some reason I just think this team's going to bounce back, and the Lakers are going to let up just a hair, I think, because they're up 2-0. That's just the human tendency. You can talk all you want as a coach, we can't let up, guys. Everybody knows the situation, and the Nuggets will take advantage if you let up. So
definitely
I'm not ruling the Nuggets out in the series, not quite yet. The NHL, or well, let's see here. The NBA, there's nothing tonight, nothing going on today, NBA, the day off. Then tomorrow it's Lakers-Nuggets. That will be game three. And then Wednesday, the Heat and Celtics, after having 3 days off between games, will finally play. So they'll be rested, which is great for Gordon Hayward and the Celtics. Celtics and the Heat, game four. Celtics did win game three, and they had to have it in order to avoid going down 3-0. So Celtics-Heat will be on Wednesday, Lakers-Nuggets tomorrow, and that'll catch up the series. Both series will be through three games after the Lakers-Nuggets play game three tomorrow. The NHL Stanley Cup Finals, the Stars beat the Lightning on Friday 4-1. Actually, that was Saturday 4-1, and the Stars lead one game to none. So tonight on NBC Sports Network, because hockey has the worst TV deal in the history of sports, That's right. Stanley Cup Finals. Can you imagine the NBA Finals on ESPNU or something like that? Yeah. Like NBC Sports Network? Or the NBA
ESPN
Finals?
Plus.
ESPN Plus. We have to pay $4.99 a month, which, you know, is just way too much money to pay. Everybody stop the presses and just that's where you draw the line for $4.99 a month. My goodness. No, a bad deal would be you're on CBS Sports Network. You could be on that. That's amazing to me. This is a Monday night game, and NBC's like, our regular TV programming's better. Even if it's reruns, we don't care. I don't know what they have on TV tonight. Probably Love Island. No, that's on CBS. By the way, I don't watch that show. Never heard of it until Jim Nantz promoed it yesterday. Love Island tonight on CBS.
Must have missed the promo, too.
What's that?
I said I must have missed the promo because I've never heard of it.
I don't think you're missing much, except a lot of love.
It's not anything like I want to watch.
No. Shutter Island, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
But Love Island, I'm not going to watch that one. Stars Lightning game 2 tonight, NBC Sports Network at 7 o'clock as the Stars lead that series 1-0. One quick thing I want to throw out there. From high school football on Friday night, I've called football games, basketball games, baseball games. I've called lots of sports since I was 18, since I was a freshman in college. So 25, 26 years later, I have seen some very impressive comebacks in sports within a game.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it Centralia many times in girls basketball in particular. I've seen it. I've seen it from the Beloit boys multiple times in basketball games. I've seen amazing comebacks. Centralia girls in a basketball game at state was insane. I think it was against Norwich. I've seen these amazing comebacks. I've seen them not so much in football, but I've seen a few. I've seen a lot in basketball, and I've seen a lot. And Friday night, if you didn't listen to our coverage, we were talking about on the scoreboard show when Dustin and I were talking about the games that took place on Friday night. And it takes a lot to shock me or to stun me. I am not easily shocked or stunned unless you shot me with a stun gun, then I'd be stunned. And if you shot me with a cattle prod, then I'd be shocked. But I'm talking just in regards to emotions and reactions. It takes a lot for me to be shocked or stunned because I think those words are way overused in our vocabulary. Oh, I'm just shocked that Butker hit a 58-yard field goal. No, you're not. Come on. I'm stunned the Chiefs came back and won that game. Really? I mean, the last five times they've been down double digits, they've won, so you shouldn't be stunned or shocked, or you're just not paying attention, or you have no other vocabulary words to use. But what I saw Friday night in the Beloit-Concordia football game, I was stunned. I have not seen that drastic of an improvement from a football team on one side of the ball in 25 years of covering sports at any level. I have never seen it. There was no reason, absolutely no reason, for me or anyone else that watched the Beloit Southeast Saline football game, I'm talking offensively. Now, there was reason to believe that Beloit could hang around because of their defense, because they did play well defense against Southeast Saline the week before and lost 18-0. But there was no single reason at all why you would say Beloit's going to score a lot of points against Concordia. Are you kidding me? If you told me before the game, how's Beloit going to win, I would tell you 12-6.
Mm-hmm.
18-12. That's it. They're no more than that. If you told me the final score is going to be 36-7 and one team is up 20-0 at halftime and one team is up 36-0, and one team was going to run for 232 yards and so forth and so on, I would have told you, as long as anybody else out there listening, if you're honest, you know you wouldn't have said Beloit. You wouldn't have. But Concordia had the experience coming back, the whole backfield back, the quarterback back, a 1,000-yard back who was held to 0 yards Friday by that Beloit defense. Brad Gober, what him and his staff did Friday night is the best coaching adjustments I have ever seen for an offensive football team from 1 week to the next. And I mean that. I was racking my brain over the weekend to try to come up with something because I think it's so easy right after something happens to say, that's the best comeback I've ever seen. Really? It happened 2 weeks ago. That's the greatest college national championship game ever since 2019. Oh, that would have been last year. ESPN throws that out there. First time that they've been 2-0 since 18, which means, oh, wow, last year they didn't go 2-0. Whoop-de-doo. These stats, if you really think about them, they're not that impressive. Beloit had 80 yards of total offense against Southeast Saline. Let me repeat that. 80 yards of offense on 44 plays. That's less than 2 yards a play, ladies and gentlemen. Their longest play from scrimmage against Southeast Lean was 11 yards. So they go up against a team that had given up only 7 points all year, Concordia. And naturally, they score 36 points. I mean, it's obvious. You knew it was coming. They ran for 232. They completely changed their offense. I'm sorry, Coach Gober. I love you to death, but don't. In a post-game interview, I had to call him out on that one. I don't know if you heard the interview, but he was like, well, we really didn't change anything. It was just variation of a play. No, you did. You did. You know why I know that? Because there's a clip that's on social media where Coach Gober comes yelling, screaming at the kids, excited after the win, and at the very last part, they apparently didn't edit it quite soon enough. He goes, we made some changes this week. Okay? Yeah, the change was you give the ball to a lot of different people. You got play action, fake toss this way, throw it this way. You've got extra running back in the backfield, three-back set, the block. You're giving the ball to a senior that carried the ball 6 times all year long, and he got 21 carries, but you didn't change anything? Of course you changed something. He knows he did.
Yeah.
I don't know if he thought the people are listening. He was going to let the cat out of the bag by saying they made changes. All the people got to do is look at the film. Obviously, Concordia had no chance to be prepared for that. The only thing they had is maybe could make adjustments at halftime, which they really weren't able to do. And there was nothing on film to tell Concordia that Bullitt was going to go to a three-back set and pound the football. And Bullitt controlled the line of scrimmage. And for all those people that were jumping off the wagon, and you know who you were, with Bullitt Trojan football, are being very critical of the coaching staff. And I understand it's easy. When you're sitting back, I was very critical of Anthony Lynn not going 4th-and-1, so I'm a hypocrite, okay? Fine. I think high school is a little bit different than pros, okay? These coaches aren't making millions of dollars to be getting it right. Anthony Lynn is in the business of getting it right, okay? He gets paid to get it right. He loses a couple more games like that, he'll be in the hot seat, trust me. Your high school coach will not be in the hot seat usually if you make a mistake like that, okay? But Coach Gober has been preaching to his credit week in and week out after every single game. And I'm sure he's heard noise. Every coach hears noise. Even if you're 8-0 and you lose a game, there's noise, okay? Doesn't matter what your record is. You hear noise. You got to just say the heck with the noise. You got to block out the noise. You got to worry about your locker room, worry about your kids, and focus on what you have inside your walls in the locker room. And that coaching staff did one hell of a job. And as did that team the other night, for those kids to still believe. I mean, come on. It's only human nature. I'm sure they heard it too. I mean, guys really aren't very good offensively. You only had 80 yards of offense. What are you guys going to do to score points? How are you going to win games if you can't score points? I'm sure they heard the negativity out there. I mean, it just happens. And for those kids that just hunker down, believe in their coaches, now that coaching staff along with those kids, that trust factor has gone up exponentially after winning. And not just winning, pounding their rival. That was a really disappointing loss for Concordia. I know Concordia people are very disappointed on the way they played because they did not play well. And they weren't expecting to get blown out. And Todd said during the broadcast, you look across the Concordia fans, they look shell-shocked and stunned. I said, look at the Beloit fans. They look stunned in a good way.
Yeah.
They did, because nobody saw it coming. Nobody, except probably the Beloit coaching staff and some of the kids, or all the kids. Those, and that's all it takes. You don't need to listen to Joe Schmo, Wade Schmo, Dusty Schmo, whoever it may be. You don't need to listen to us. We may have a breakdown, and we may be right more times than not, or we may be wrong more times than not, but we don't hit 1,000. We're not right all the time. There's no doubt we're not. And sometimes it's a revisionist history. Now, Anthony Lynn, 4th-and-1, that's not revisionist history. When it was 4th-and-1, I was like, you go for it. If I'm the coach, I'm going for it. I'm not even thinking about anything else. I'm going for it. I do not want Mahomes to get the football. What Beloit did changing their offense in a week span is great coaching, because there are so many coaches out there over the years. You've seen it. I've seen it. Where a coach knows how to coach a certain way in a certain system, whether it's defense or offense, and they have no flexibility because they have no idea how to adjust or adjust to the kids that they have. Because in high school, you can't just go out, at least most high schools, can't go out and find, oh, I need a linebacker, let me go recruit one. Oh, I need a new running back or quarterback, let me recruit one. No, you just got whatever's coming up. That's just the way it is, all right? If you got a small senior class, then you deal with that class, and then you got a bigger class. Or if you got a whole bunch of freshmen are talented and those are the guys, the best players, you go with them and you might take your lumps, but you work on, hey, we're going to get better. Patience is a virtue. And Brad Gober preached that every single week this year so far. After every game, losing to Belleville, Republic County, losing to Southeast Lean, he said, listen, it's a work in progress. It's going to take time. We're going to get there. Well, by golly, I didn't see him and his team getting to where they got the other night. No way, Jose. And anybody out there tells me outside of that locker room that you thought that was going to happen, then you better give me your lottery picks, numbers. I want them now. I want them now, and I'll buy a ticket. And that's what's great about sports. That's why sports is so awesome. Now, I cannot tell you that Beloit now will go on to a run and they'll make it to the state quarterfinals again this year in the playoffs. I can't tell you Beloit's going to go win the district. I can't tell you Beloit's going to win another game. I can't tell you if they're going to lose another game. I have no idea. Clearly, I have no idea. I mean, I didn't think Beloit was going to win Friday night. I'm not going to lie to you. And if they did, it was going to be close. It wasn't. It was complete domination. That coaching staff had one heck of a game plan. And they absolutely, the kids, executed it. So the trust factor is there. There's the belief that we can win games now, and there's nobody on the schedule that Beloit has the rest of the way that they can't beat. There's nobody left on the schedule they can't beat if they play like they did the other night. Now, the question is going to be, now you're going to have more on film, because that was a bit of a surprise element for Concordia not being ready for it. So I just want to shout out to Brad Gober and his coaching staff. They did an unbelievable job. A shout out to the Beloit Trojan kids. And way to stick it to everybody out there that didn't believe in you. Way to stick it to a lot of people out there that were questioning everything that was going on. And way to stick it to even media people that didn't believe you were going to win. You know what? I'm happy to eat crow. And I didn't even come on and make any predictions about who was going to win. But I will tell you, full disclosure, when we were talking off the air, I didn't give Beloit a great chance to win. I didn't.
Yeah.
And none of us did. But that's what's so great about sports. One week to the next, it can be completely different. Now, will Beloit go out and play Ellsworth this week and win 50-0? Or will they maybe be flat and they get lucky to win a close game or lose to Ellsworth? I don't know. I give up. I didn't see what was coming last Friday at all. But that's what makes sports great. A lot of people thought Osborne. I'm not saying this was as big of a – this was more of an even matchup, Osborne and Lakeside. But I think more people than not would have picked Osborne to win that game. Lakeside went out and won the football game, put up 44 points, and it was a huge, gigantic win for Lakeside. Unbelievable emotional win. You were there covering that game. Mm-hmm. That's what makes rivalry games so special, is that we saw last year that if going in the Beloit-Concordia game, the favorite was Beloit, and Concordia scored 34 and beat Beloit and kind of stunned Beloit. Now this year, Beloit stuns Concordia back. You know, we've seen Lakeside and won over Osborne in 9 years. Now, granted, I hadn't played the last couple of years, but Osborne always had their number, and many times was blowouts. All of a sudden, they've got the kids coming up the ranks, ready to go. Osborne loses some talent. Playing field's neutralized a little bit, and Lakeside takes advantage of their opportunity the other night. That's why you and I, I'll speak for you and you can speak for yourself, that's why we love covering sports, is because we, as much as we think we know what's going to happen, and in the past, we usually do know what's going to happen in eight-man games, usually. Mm. We know point rules are coming, this and that. This year, not so much, and that's great. We love the fact that we can't tell you for sure who's going to win. Because that's what makes sports awesome.
We were talking about last week, going into that Osborne Lakeside game, you asked me who's the favorite to win the district. And I was like, well, it's got to be one of the teams that started 1-0. Mm-hmm. And Osborne's at home against Lakeside. And I'm kind of in my mind, I'm kind of deducing that right now it's probably Osborne. Sure. They made a lot of improvements from week one to week two and did some good things. But then, you know, Lakeside's right there. And, you know, St. John's Tipton is a team that, you know, you're talking about Thunder Ridge in the district, Rock Hills, if they can get healthy all the ways. And so we were talking about that. But one of the things that obviously we talked about Friday, Lakeside couldn't get a big deficit early, and they didn't, and never trailed by more than a touchdown. And so I had somebody ask me this weekend, were you surprised that Lakeside won that game? I said, absolutely not. I was not surprised at all. What did surprise me was that Osborne fumbled early in the third quarter. Lakeside scored, and then they scored again to take a 30-14 lead and never even were – Osborne never got back within a single possession of them. Mm-hmm. And that's what surprised me a little bit about that was, you know, Lakeside still kind of a green team as far as that's concerned, of the experience of actually going right in and beating a team like that and holding on for a win like that. And that's what impressed me the most about that game on Friday night for Lakeside, was they got the lead and they said, we're keeping it. And Osborne brought the heat, man. They're putting Lakeside in tough positions, and their late fumble at the end, or not fumble, but bad snap in the Wildcat was really what did them in. But it is. It's exciting to see just all these teams, the level playing field, and I'm going into games not knowing who's going to win.
That's fun.
And, you know, you're going into games thinking you know who's going to win, and it just goes
pleasantly surprised.
And so, I mean, that's why we're doing this. That's why I love doing it, like you said. And that's why right now, as each year passes, I focus more on what we're doing here with local sports than I care about the NBA or NHL or pro sports, even some college sports, is because I said on Friday night, I said, you know, you get to you do these games for these kids and you get to know all of them. It's tough to see any team lose in a game like that with for me with Lakeside and Osborne. Right. But, man, you got to feel good for Lakeside to be able to get over that hump of Osborne and be able to pick up a win. I know Osborne will, you know, they'll figure it out. They'll turn around, and Coach Tiernan will have them doing good things. And Lakeside's just, they're jubilant right now with wins over Rock Hills and Osborne, teams that they have not had a lot of success against lately. And it's just, but it's just fun to see it. It's fun to see kids put in the work.
It is.
And be rewarded for it.
And speaking of Lakeside Osborne, both on the radio this Friday. Thunder Ridge at Lakeside, a huge game in that district in KD Country 94. Osborne Rock Hills on Z96.3 Lake. If Thunder Ridge goes in and wins at Lakeside, that district all of a sudden is just discombobulated, isn't it?
Yes.
Just all over. I mean, you could, we talk about how that district, the district winner might have one or two losses. It's possible. You know, St. John's Tipton with an exciting win over Thunder Ridge came down to the wire, a fourth down stop. Thunder Ridge, all they do is play close games this year. St. John's Tipton got their first win. Pretty exciting stuff. So Thunder Ridge Lakeside on KD Country 94, Osborne Rock Hills on Z96.3 Lake, and we'll have a live video stream of Beloit hosting Ellsworth on homecoming this Friday. NCKSports.com via Beloit Trojan Channel. A couple of notes. Our thoughts and prayers go out to James White's and his family. His dad was killed in a car accident yesterday. His mom is in critical condition from that car accident. James White, running back for the New England Patriots, did not play last night, obviously. As he was informed just ahead of the game in Seattle that his father, Tyrone, died in the car crash and his mom, Lisa, is in critical condition. So thoughts and prayers go out to James White, his family and friends. An interesting note here, Hall of Famer Deion Sanders returning to college football. He's going to be head coach at Jackson State, FCS school. Deion Sanders, prime time, Neon Deion, the head coach at Jackson State. Here's the thing, though. How many kids at Jackson State actually know who Deion Sanders is? Well, they might know who he is, but they really know how great a player
as
he was.
As a player, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. How about that? Deion Sanders will be a head football coach at the age of 53. He's currently an offensive coordinator at a high school in Texas, and now he's going to be head coach at Jackson State. That should be fun to watch.
Yes.
Ticket sales may go up if you're allowed to have fans. Have a great day, everyone. Danny Wolniak over on the show tomorrow. Talk Chiefs.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.